Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
This show's audio was via a Skype call.
Get fired up for Spirit Fire Radio with your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer. Get ready to shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in these modern times. Bring purpose to your life through practical spirituality and add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. Now, here are your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Spirit Fire Radio. My name is Steve Kramer, and I am joined today and every week by my lovely co-host, Dr. Dorothy Riddle. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi, Steve. It's great to be here today.
It's wonderful to be with you and to be starting a new month, yeah?
Yes. Very exciting.
It is.
Cosmic citizens.
Cosmic. We're going to go cosmic, galactic, universal. So just to put it in perspective, listeners, for the last 7 months, we have talked about universal principles and their influence on us, on our growth, on society, on our spiritual nature, and quite a bit on our capacity to generate goodwill. So, you know, these are the ways these principles shape us into cosmic citizens. Or, Dorothy, right, they reveal the cosmic citizens that we are when we are aligned with these principles. So
that's a great way of putting it, Steve.
Yes, I caught myself. So it's December. It's a new month. So that means we are going to spend an entire month talking about our cosmic nature, about our cosmic citizenship, which I really love, Dorothy. You came up with that idea or that phrase, the cosmic citizen. I really appreciate it. It's been fun to even ponder that. What does it mean to be a cosmic citizen? So that's what we're going to talk about on this show today is what exactly does that mean? And Dorothy, we will often start a show off with a quote or two. I'm wondering if you've got one up your sleeve.
I do. I've got one new one, and I'm going to repeat one that we've used from time to time, Steve, because I think it's particularly relevant today. The first one is from Carl Sagan, and it's, "The nitrogen in our DNA, the calcium in our teeth, the iron in our blood, the carbon in our apple pies were made in the interiors of collapsing stars. We are made of star stuff." And this to me is a really interesting quote because this is a scientific reality that we come from the stars, that all of the components that we were made up of came settled, if you will, like stardust on Earth, and were used to make us as humans. And then the other one is the one from Pierre de Chardin that we refer to from time to time. "We are not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience." Or we could even say we are cosmic beings having a human experience.
Very good. Yes, I love that quote. You know, since we sort of brought that up, we tend to bring that up quite a bit, but since we've brought it to the forefront of my psyche, I tend to use it all the time. So I have to say that that quote has left quite an impact on me and really speaks to really the truth of our beingness. It is important that we look from the ground up. You know, as human beings, we seem to always be striving. You know, you and I talk about meditation a lot, where there is a sense, as some people at least interpret meditation, of aspiring and attaining, you know, reaching in a way. And so we are often thinking of the spiritual experience as something we're reaching toward, that we're moving up. But we have to also look at it from the top down. that mm-hmm. we are trying to just inhabit these sort of meat suits, as I've heard it said, and you know, and learning to use it well, learning to use it purposefully and effectively and creatively, mm-hmm. so that it's fun.
That's right. That's right. And you know, Steve, I'd like to just talk a little bit about citizenship, because you know, there's at least in the U.S. context, and I think also broader than that, there's been a lot of discussion and debate about what it means to be a citizen. You know, are you in? Are you out? You know, we have all of these people moving as migrants across national boundaries, and, you know, should they be allowed and all of that kind of thing. And it is true that to be a citizen means that you are an inhabitant of a particular geographic space, and you have rights and obligations in relation to that. And you know, we talk about, you know, we're members, you know, of a community. You know, am I a citizen of my community or my state, or you know, put that at different levels. But I think it's really interesting and challenging to reframe that if we think about the fact that actually we are citizens of the cosmos, all of us, all yes. of us. None of us are migrants or strangers in that sense. We all are. And so we may live in different geographic spaces, we may move around, but we all have rights as cosmic citizens, and we have obligations as cosmic citizens. So how would we look at these issues around, you know, immigration and refugee status and all of that? Would that shift the way that we feel about that or think about that if we understand that it's actually in this cosmic context where everyone belongs? There's no one that doesn't belong.
Yes, we expand the periphery of our borders to include not only Earth, the solar system, but even the cosmos, which is mm-hmm. quite fantastic and includes so much, you know. But yet, as you mentioned with Carl Sagan, that we are precipitated, if you will, from that star stuff, and mm-hmm. that we and within that you see that we really are all equal. I mean, we are all made of the same stuff. We mm-hmm. all breathe the same air. Blood courses through our veins in the exact same way. And so, mm-hmm. when you zoom out, it does seem absurd. You know, when you say, "Well, mm-hmm. how do you get in?" You know, how do mm-hmm. you know? Well, should we let you in to this particular boundary? And it you realize how limiting that is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I was noticing that, you know, well, it's not just one news article. There is a number of news articles about on the southern border of the United States. You know, what's been called the caravan. You know, people feeling really desperate to push across into the United States. And of course, that's being seen as illegal and even something that can be met with violence, right?
Yes.
With guns or with tear gas. And I bring that down to my community level. There is the only public road that leads down to the body of water that surrounds part of the town where I live. The only public road has been closed off because there's controversy around that, and there's like a, you know, yellow fence there and stuff. And I know I myself have thought about going down, because I like going down to the waterfront, you know, going down and pushing that aside or pushing through that so that I have access. I mean, I'm a property owner here. Why shouldn't I be able to do that? So if you take that again to that more cosmic level, why shouldn't the people who have walked to the United States be able to continue to walk right on across? Because in the larger scheme of things, we are all one. They're not the other, which is the way they're being characterized.
Well, and when you just even look at the, you know, when you zoom out to from the rights of perhaps a U.S. citizen, when we talk about citizenship, but we could all agree we are all human. And so when you look at the, you know, the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights, goodness gracious, when you look at that situation at the border and you look at some of those, you know, your rights, you know, you have the right to be equal before the law. You have the right to not be unfairly detained. Really? You have, you know...
You have the right to be treated with dignity. That is one of the first statements in that UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which the United States is a signatory to.
Yeah, and not discriminated upon. You have the right to life, to live freely and safely. And you think, freely and safely, well, and when you are an innocent, just when you are just not even innocent, when you are a human being, and, you know, you've got tear grass being thrown at you. So anyway, we certainly could go down that road for quite some time. But I would love to circle back, Dorothy, because I found it interesting that you, when you said cosmic citizen, and I looked a bit into this idea, what is the difference? Because I tend to use the word universal a lot. I will say universal law or, you know, a universal principle. And so when I saw the words cosmic, I thought, now what's the difference between cosmic and universal? And when I looked it up, it was quite interesting because it said that the cosmos pertains to the laws and the structures of the universe. So the cosmos means the universe seen as well-ordered and whole. And the universe means all existing matter and space considered as a whole. So they're really synonymous, but with cosmos, it really does have to do with order. So as does citizenship, as you say, responsibility. So I just love that we're going to take this month and it follows, you know, these seven principles that we talked about every month, a full month on one of these principles. And I hope we'll just get some time even today. We're going to go to a break in a minute. But just to go through those seven principles, perhaps listeners who are joining us now, to even reflect between the two of us on ways that they really are aspects of ourselves as cosmic citizens. But I love that difference is really, it is about the ordered whole. And that order is intrinsic. It is the stuff that holds it all together, really, you know, because it is a form. The cosmos is a form. And forms adhere to certain principles and laws that keep them together. And I found it interesting that the opposite of cosmos is chaos. I never knew that. So very interesting.
Interesting.
You know, on that, let's actually go to a break. And then we come back. Maybe we could go over the seven principles and just talk about them cosmically. What do you think?
Okay, great.
Right. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Barbara Scheidegger, clinical hypnotherapist and founder of Swiss Hypnotherapy. And this is a tip with purpose. Being wrong or making mistakes is human. What have you learned from it? Start laughing about the silly things you did. Yeah, laugh about it. Being happy is more important than being always right. Start listening to your feedback. Be willing to redefine yourself every day. Communication with yourself and others who already are successful in their lives. Stay balanced. And when you fall off the wagon, don't dwell on it. Just hop back on. Forgive yourself. Admit what you did. Move on and smile. I hope this tip helps you. You can reach me at 323-999-4775 or at my website at swisshypnotherapy.com.
Welcome back, listeners. Dorothy and I are so happy you are still with us, or perhaps just joining us. We are talking about being cosmic citizens. What does it mean to be a cosmic citizen? Before we get back into our conversation, it'd be wonderful to talk about our organizations. Both Dorothy and I are here as a collaborative effort between two educational nonprofits. And Dorothy, you want to start? Tell us a bit about the School for Esoteric Studies.
Yes, thanks. So I'm with School for Esoteric Studies. You can find out more about us at esotericstudies.net. We provide training for persons who have a spiritual practice that they wish to deepen. And we do that through meditation, study, and service, and also group projects. And we have a number of initiatives underway that you can find out about on our website. But the one that that Spirit Fire Radio is part of is our intentional intergroup collaborations. We decided several years ago to reach out to like-minded organizations and work together towards common objectives. And we're absolutely thrilled to be working with Spirit Fire on this. If you are listening and you belong to a group that would like to work with the School for Esoteric Studies on any particular project, please look at our website and be in touch with us, and we would be delighted to work with you. Our most recent project, which you'll find if you go to esotericstudies.net, is we're calling Inclusive Social Action, which is how do we say this is not okay to harm that is happening without increasing the divisiveness. So we have a white paper on that, and we are very interested in any comments or thoughts people have in that regard. We'll be issuing two more white papers. Again, that's esotericstudies.net.
Awesome. Thanks, Dorothy. Yeah, lots of wonderful stuff on that website. And I believe the white paper is right there as you go to the homepage, yeah?
That's right.
Yeah, wonderful stuff. Great work. So indeed, we have in common our two organizations, Spirit Fire and the School for Esoteric Studies, a goal of finding ways to teach people the importance of awareness, of consciousness, and finding ways to incorporate that into everyday life, showing people that that can be done, that it is effective and worthwhile. And at Spirit Fire, we primarily do that through meditation. We've got a meditation retreat center in Western Massachusetts. We've got our own meditation program called The Practice of Living Awareness. And that is a free online meditation practice. We're doing new meditations as podcasts all year long. And then we do retreats throughout the year that support that practice. And one retreat builds on the next. In January, we start a new year, so a new round of meditations and a new round of retreats. We begin with a retreat called Intentions, which is meditatively setting the intention for the new year. We talk about intention quite a bit on the radio show, so that's going to be a great retreat, and I'm sure influenced quite a bit by all the work we've done here. So if you want to find out more about Spirit Fire, we also do online classes and programs. You can find out more at spiritfire.com, and we are just totally thrilled to be doing this collaborative effort of Spirit Fire Radio with the School for Esoteric Studies. Wonderful. So, Dorothy, let's talk a bit about the seven principles, shall we?
Yes, yes. So the first principle, for those of you that, this will be reviewed for those of you who have been listening with us through this sequence, and perhaps new for those of you that are just joining us. The first principle is interconnectivity, that we are, in fact, all part of this cosmic energy wave, this web. This is something that is not just a kind of metaphysical thought, but is something that quantum physics has verified, that there is this one large energetic field that we are all part of. And what we do affects the entire universe in some cosmos, in some sense. I'm going to try to make sure to use the word cosmos, especially after you linked it up to the ordered whole, Steve.
Yeah. well, so, I also, in relation to Carl Sagan, you know, he's actually so related to that word, cosmos, and that really it is factual that we are a part of this of the greater whole. We are not only connected in the building blocks of the cosmos, but we are connected quite literally as energy. I mean, it is a fact, as you say. Yeah.
Well, and people may not be aware of it if they don't think about the world from this perspective, but we are actually waveforms of energy. So there's this energy field, and we are part of the, literally part of the energy field. We experience ourselves as having, you know, a concrete manifested form, but it's really, you know, just like sometimes people talk about the fact that we forget that a lot of this form is actually water. The form itself is actually an energetic wavelength. And so how we use that energy, how we focus that energy, what we create with that focus really has an impact. And I would invite listeners to take a period of time, whether it's a half hour or a day, and just consciously go through that period of time feeling yourself into the fact that you are connected to everything around you, not just what you can physically see, but, you know, what's in what we call the sky, but, you know, which is in the outer parts of the energy field and on past our galaxy, you know, and these hundreds of thousands of galaxies, the whole cosmos. It's a humbling experience, and it's a very uplifting experience.
And thrilling. Thrilling. And, you know, I would say, Dorothy, it can be as simple, you know, it can sound very complex, you know, and really a stretch, like stretching your mind to realize, you know, we're all made of stars. But simply smiling at someone, you know, when you smile with someone, you become connected with them. You have chosen to affirm a connection. And in a sense, you are creating within this great form that is the cosmos, because a smile, it connects, and you can sense, you know, it creates further potential. It invites, when you smile with someone, you're inviting, you're creating the potential for more. You're saying yes, you know, to not only that connection, but to expanding upon that experience. So I say, just go out and try it, you know, from your heart, from a place of alignment, like in your own truth. Really smile with someone, and you are aligning with the cosmos in its expansive nature, you know, in its nature of interconnectedness as well. So, you know, smiling is actually really, I think, flexing your rights as a cosmic citizen.
Well, and that leads us right into the second principle, which is participation, that we create our reality in a very real sense. We create it through the choices that we make and the focus that we hold, through the actions that we take. In the United States, there's just been this very incredible election process that's gone on, and everyone who has voted, if they were able to vote, has had an impact on what the outcome is. Or we hope they will. There's a couple places where that's still being decided. But it is true that we're not insignificant, right? What we do and the choices that we make do precipitate a particular reality.
Yes, and even those who have gotten in the way of participation, were participating in something else. They were creating a reality as well. And good for us today in the cosmic sense that we seem to be all wanting to participate in the truth and exercise our rights, our democratic rights. And we're starting to see a lot of that which might have been obscured or hidden come to light as a result of participation coming to the forefront on every level. You know, it's every thought. Every thought, every word spoken, every intention, good or bad, every choice you make, and sometimes even that choice is inaction. All of it creates your reality. A simple thought, it as you say, it precipitates and it magnetizes. Yeah.
And that itself can be kind of humbling if we think about, we really take seriously the fact we are part of the process of reality creation.
Yeah.
The third principle is one that may be a little bit more difficult to wrap our minds around, and this is nonlinearity. We know, again, from science that our world kind of linear time that we think about. We use the continuum of past, present, and future to organize our experience, but that doesn't mean that that's actually the way things happen. What we know is that we have a quantum reality where all kinds of probabilities coexist at the same time.
Yes.
And there's some interesting implications of that. For me, one of the most important ones is that we can actually heal the past. We can reach back in time, in what we think of as time, and bring experiences into our present reality and think about them differently, feel about them differently, experience them differently, and they actually then reside in our memory in a different way. And this, I'm just going to take a little sidestep, Steve, because I find this so fascinating. When I was in graduate school, the way I was trained about the mind and about memory was that memory was like a filing cabinet, right? You just stuck things in and they stayed there, and then they might dim a little bit, but basically they were there. But actually what happens is that what our body does is it stores our experience in a number of different places, and then it recreates it for us. And based on our current emotional space and our current assumptions and our current beliefs, that may go together in quite a different way. So again, it's not a static time sequence. It's a very living presence. Mm. Present.
Nice. I also find it's interesting, you know, when we think of time as a marker, you know, it helps us sort of understand our past and our future and make sense of that as it pertains to us. But when you think about everybody, I love that non-linearity follows precipitation. Non-linearity follows participation. That we are all participating in creating this reality. And so when we are 7 billion souls all creating this world and this reality around us, it is linear maybe from our own perspective, but as we all are doing this together, you can kind of sense that that is, it's got quite this sort of organic, you know, morphic sense to it when you realize we're all coming into contact with each other's creations at all times, at different levels, in different ways. And so this creation of reality can't be linear, really. You know, it's quite organic. It's not so structured. It's just a little bit of a different way of looking at that idea of nonlinearity as well.
I think another thing that may help our listeners grapple with this idea of nonlinearity is the linear model, and you know, and our clocks, our timepieces reinforce this, is that all of these minutes and they're the same interval over and over and over again. But if you actually reflect on your own experience, you'll know that it's not that. Sometimes you feel like you're running out of time, right? Things are moving so quickly. And other times you wish they would, but you're waiting for something and it's taking forever. You know, and time just seems to drag on. And then you look at the clock, and from the clock's perspective, there's only 3 minutes that's gone by, and you're sure it's at least an hour. So there, our sense of time is also not literal, and is not equal bits, so to speak.
And the same for any one or two or more people. Speaking of which, Dorothy, can you imagine we are long overdue for a break? Time has gone really fast, so we're going to take a break and okay, come back and talk more about the principles. We'll be right back. Hi, I'm Steve Kramer of Spirit Fire Radio, and I believe that meditation changes everything. It leads us in the direction of greater well-being, and that's a fact. I struggled with meditation for years. I understood the principles, but I found it hard to incorporate them into my everyday life. Spirit Fire's meditation practice changed that. It's called the Practice of Living Awareness, and it's taught in 14 steps. These are 14 tools that I can use in any moment, on and off the cushion. Steps like smile, flow, and ground of being support my clarity of mind while I'm navigating the ups and downs of modern life. That's why it's called the Practice of Living Awareness. If you'd like to add meditation to your daily experience, the Practice of Living Awareness is free, online, and it's suited for any level of practitioner. Visit spiritfire.com for more information. And be sure to check out Spirit Fire's meditation retreats in Western Massachusetts. It's all there at spiritfire.com. Welcome back, listeners, to Spirit Fire Radio. My name is Steve Kramer, and I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Dorothy Riddle, and we have been talking about seven principles that underlie our reality, universal principles, that together, these principles really reveal the ways in which we are all cosmic citizens that are hopefully, you know, leveraging these principles to creating a better world and just creating a more creative and exciting day for ourselves, right, Dorothy?
Right.
And more. So far we've talked about interconnectivity, participation, and non-linearity. So there are four more principles, and non-duality is the next. We spent an entire month, that was a great month, talking about non-duality. Dorothy, you want to perhaps just have a run with it?
Sure. So we started this show talking about how we are all cosmic citizens. We are all part of the cosmos. We're all made of the same star stuff. And non-duality is the principle to remind us that we are all interconnected. We are all part of this whole. And the dualistic language, the dualistic thinking that we use when we talk about us and them is referring to an illusion, because there's not really that separativeness. And it's actually that separativeness, when we engage in that kind of separative thinking, that's what leads us to violence. Because it's, if you think of someone as being part of you or a relative of yours, someone that you hold close, you know, that you care about, that you love, it's very difficult to be violent to them. As soon as you start objectifying them or pushing them away or seeing them as a thing to be used, that's when violence or harm comes into play. So the principle of non-duality is actually an important reflection of our reality, and also an important principle to help us live in a harmless manner.
Mm. Well said. And, you know, you can catch yourself when you start making assumptions, or you start talking about things as this or that, you know, us versus them. We tend to just polarize, you know, to think that there are only two. And I think that is because really underneath it all, even on a cosmic level, it's a fact that our solar system is really a solar system about relationship. So we tend to want to polarize and look at, you know, it's as if you looked at the Earth as only a North and South Pole. And certainly we've got these two points that stand on, you know, the extremes of the Earth, but it's what happens in the middle. So it's when we tend to reduce somebody or a situation or anything down to its smallest form and then put it against another thing as a way to define it. We get into trouble, because it's what happens in between that is so beautiful. You know, it's what happens between the North and the South Pole that really is the entirety of the Earth. And I love thinking of that in cosmic terms, because if you think of physics, so much of the universe is electromagnetic. And that needs a positive and a negative to create the electromagnetic field. But it is within that field that form actually happens, you know, that relationship happens, that manifestation happens, that we actually can see the stuff that is created by this, these polarities. So, you know, non-duality is wanting us to not only look at the two extremes, but realize that the world and our experience within it is very complex, and we need to not reduce it down. And when you see it as complex and you look for the gray, you know, you look for that which happens in between the two, I find it generates curiosity. It generates a sense of wonder. And, you know, we all know where assumptions lead us. So it's just remembering that that space in between is where the good stuff is, you know, and that can be in between even an argument. You know, it's not taking a definitive side, but trying to come together and see, well, what is the glue? What is actually between these two extremes? You know, the meeting ground, it's that middle ground that's interesting.
Well, and that, Steve, that leads us right into our next principle, which is interdependence.
Beautiful.
That we are not independent actors. And this is, again, I was trained as a psychologist, and at that time, the idea of being an independent adult was the be-all and end-all. You know, that you grew from dependency into independence. But actually, what I've come to understand is that maturation takes us on to interdependence. Yeah. Because, again, all of our thoughts and feelings affect other people. And we can, you know, it's not just us. It's also we are interdependent with, for example, the earth, which is a living organism that tries to, you know, to provide a home for us. But we're not necessarily as cooperative as we could be. Yeah. In the manner in which we live here.
Well, and I find that that is a wonderful bridge, actually, to the last two principles. And we could actually talk about those three all together, which is adaptability, that the earth is constantly trying to adapt to our way of imposing upon it, quite literally. You know, and it is, we talked quite a bit that month about survival is that adaptability is necessary for survival, that the change is inevitable, and we've got to, you know, the species that survive and thrive are the species that learn to adapt. And so it is recognizing that interdependence and then being able to adapt with the other, you know, so that you are constantly in a state of flow and co-creating together, not working against, but working with, which is adaptability. Flexibility, I think, is a good word too that we came up with quite a bit in that month.
Mm-hmm. And people, our listeners, may not be aware of the again, if one isn't thinking or experiencing life from the perspective of science, that we need oxygen to live. But we need a certain mixture of elements that we take in, and because we're not usually breathing pure oxygen, and we do lots of things. We put lots of things into the atmosphere that affect the balance of the elements that are there, and the earth rebalances for us and provides us with what I think of as relatives, you know, like trees that help to clean the air, or other aspects of, like, eelgrass and others in the water that help to clean the water so that it's usable, and it helps to keep the salinity of the water in the oceans in balance. Now, we can see the effect of when we push the boundaries too far and we are not acting in a collaborative and cooperative way, and then the earth says, okay, forget it, you know, I've adapted for a while, but I'm not adapting any more than this, you know, this is your problem.
And basically now it's your turn to adapt or else, right? You will
exactly.
be forced. And it really does come down to that. that, mm-hmm. You know, you realize that you aren't quite as important or big or, you know, as you think when you watch, you know, you watch devastation that happens and the earth just takes back her land and takes back mm-hmm. her prowess, really, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and forces you to have a look at ways in which you are not being a cosmic citizen, right? I mean, if you look at it from just the Earth's perspective and the ways mm-hmm. that the Earth is showing us, you know, that when you do not accentuate our interconnectivity with her and with others, we see, you know, the repercussions of that participation, nonlinearity, when we're dualistic in our thinking, when we think it's all about us, when interdependence means nothing to us, when we refuse to cooperate or adapt, when it's really from a very egocentric, you know, perspective, we see right away that we are just not aligned cosmically, that mm-hmm. that you feel and you see the effects quite quickly these days, it seems. it feels like there's something going on, you know, that it almost feels exaggerated the ways in which when we don't really align ourselves with these principles, we really do see the results quite quickly and dramatically. Would you say so?
Absolutely. And I think it underscores another thing, which may be something that we may try to keep out of our awareness. And that is, when we talk about cosmic citizens, the cosmos is populated by entities other than humans.
Yeah.
We're not the only folks around.
Yeah.
We have other sentient beings. We have other species, the Earth itself. And quite frankly, the cosmos can get along without us just fine.
Yes.
So if we want to stay here, we need to play nice, so to speak. We need to remember that we're part of a group. We're not here just on our own.
What I also think is a wonderful point to bring forward, and certainly both of our organizations really are rooted in the ageless wisdom, which really speak quite a bit about our purpose. You know, not only the purpose of the human kingdom, but the purpose of the planet Earth within the solar system, the purpose of the sun, and the energetic, even the qualitative purpose of the beingness, if you look at our solar system as a form. You know, I mean, if you look at the solar system as a form, you see that it's got the sun as its center. It's got these rotating planets around it. It's got fields. It's got life. It's got a consciousness of it in and of itself. If you look at an atom, if you look at a cell within a human body, they all have the exact same structure and form. So to think that the solar system doesn't have not only an intelligence but a purpose would just be, first of all, ignorant, a bit short-sighted, and maybe just not something you've ever considered. But what's wonderful about the Ageless Wisdom teachings is that it really looks at these systems as forms, life forms, as aspects of consciousness. So what makes it all so exciting to be a human and to follow these principles and live by them cosmically is to know that you are actually co-creating with something so much larger than yourself that's purposeful. Mm-hmm. You know, that has an actual purpose that can be brought forward and even put in a line or two, you know. And mm-hmm. so we can see that as the Ageless Wisdom would say, that our solar system is what would be called the second ray, which is love wisdom, which essentially comes down to attraction, relation. And you see that we have got to learn how to relate to not only ourselves, our relationship to ourselves in relation to others, our relationship to ourselves in relation to the earth. But as you come to learn these principles, you realize that you're not only just learning how to get by with ease and be creative and productive and purposeful, but you're actually aligning with the cosmos, right? I mean, it's quite exciting when you look at it from that perspective. It gives me at least such wonderful incentive that, wow, my place here on the earth is actually purposeful, that I can contribute in a way that aligns with the purpose of not only the human kingdom, but the planet Earth, and not only the planet Earth, but the solar system, not only the solar system, but the cosmos. It really is that dynamic and wowing, really.
mm-hmm.
Speechless.
We have the.
Did I leave you speechless? That went kind of worthy.
No, I was wondering if there was time before the break to talk about cooperation.
Totally.
So this is the seventh principle, and it certainly relates to interdependence and adaptability, as you mentioned before. But I think it's really important to focus on its own because we find, you know, all throughout our society that there is an emphasis. It goes with this in-group, out-group emphasis that is related to the illusion of duality, the emphasis on competition, and the emphasis on scarcity, which is really what underlies that, the idea that there's only so much pie, and if you get a slice, I don't get that slice. Instead of thinking that we can work together to enlarge the pie so there's enough for everybody. And in fact, as you know, Steve, that's the theme of the trilogy that I wrote, the theme being enough for us all, and principles of abundance for the cosmic citizen being the first volume of that. But I think it's really important for us to recognize the ways in which we talk with each other or interact with each other that are based on a belief in scarcity and the need to compete for scarce resources, and contrast that with how we would be together if we assumed that there is actually enough for us all. There may not be enough for all of us to be financial millionaires, but there's enough for all of us to have a good life. And that comes from cooperation. Our physical bodies are a manifestation of cooperation. If you think of all of the systems within our bodies, the different organs, the different, you know, parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous system, all of that needs to work cooperatively together in order for us to function as physical human beings.
Wow. And does it ever let us know when we're not, when we are creating distortions within it, or we are out of alignment? You know, we feel it, and we would hope that we can at least become aware enough to recognize when we are contributing to that, that distortion or being out of balance. Balance, what a wonderful word. You know, we covered that in the first season together. To generate balance is to be aligned with those principles. Dorothy, we are indeed at a break. So, listeners, we'll be back to wrap up the show after these words.
Love Living Radio Ignite Your Whole Being with Emily Perkins is a show for those looking to explore the sparkling magnificence of their inner selves. Tune in every second and fourth Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific as Emily sheds a radiant light of love on the beauty and power that resides within you, discussing love in all its forms through conversations that provoke awareness, curiosity, and expansion. Emily shares the unlimited power of love. For more information or to listen to this show, visit lovelivingholistics.com.
Practice living in wholeness with the Body Tune-Up. 6 classes for $89 designed for radical self-healing and self-regeneration. Heal the deepest root of any challenge. The mental body was programmed in negativity, not good enough, separate from source. You're too much, you'll never make it. The emotional body holds all the pain and trauma of emotional suppression, all the pain from this life and life's past. The spiritual body is the place you connect with your higher power, your higher self, with the image and likeness of the One. The physical body houses and expresses the other three bodies every day. Go to CorneliaStephanie.com. Evolve, become a practitioner. We need to heal, integrate, and bring into wholeness and harmony the physical body, addressing all the other bodies in order to live in our true, authentic nature.
Living Lighter Radio with Jason and Patricia. We have an ecosystem approach to your life. Tune in weekly every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio as we, Jason and Patricia, discuss what's truly holding you back. We offer you the tools you need to reach your goals and at the same time be living lighter. For more information about living lighter, visit www.livinglighter.org.
Hey, welcome back, listeners. We are back talking about being a cosmic citizen. Dorothy, do you want to just go right into this last segment?
Sure. Because what I want to do, you know, we talk about cooperation, and when we talked about interdependence, we referenced the fact that, you know, we're not the only ones here. We're not the only ones that matter. And the Brian Schwimm, who's a mathematical cosmologist, has a beautiful way of looking at things, I think, and that is we need to consider all other living entities around us, living beings, as relatives. And so if you think of it from that perspective, you know, I mentioned the Earth itself, but we also have relatives who are other species, you know, who are some of the ones that have gotten a lot of attention lately are the great apes, the elephants, the cetaceans, that is the whales and the dolphins. These are all species that are themselves highly intelligent, highly social, exhibit all of the characteristics that we attribute to personhood, which is, you know, being intelligent and competent, being warm, you know, having relations with others, and having self-awareness. These are some that have that, but it goes much further. I mean, it's really fascinating once you dig into this to see all of the different types of animals that actually exhibit this, and then we move into plants. And there's plenty of research showing that plants are intelligent. They're quite social. We're not as aware of them because their communication is primarily chemical, and that's not how we communicate. But they are certainly there. The hidden lives of trees, which I talked about a couple weeks ago, talks about, you know, the intelligence of trees, the ways in which they work together, the ways in which they support what would be seen as competitive species, because they know that together they can create an environment that is healthier for all of them. And we have some initiatives on the international arena to try to underscore this. We have a river in New Zealand and a couple of rivers in India that have been declared as persons, in other words, having the legal rights of persons. Bolivia and Ecuador have both put into their constitutions language about the earth having rights. So we're starting to have this awareness that at least within our planet, that there are other forms of intelligence, other forms of self-awareness that are not human, but that are as important and make critical contributions.
Mm. It's having reverence, I find, is such a key word, you know, with nature and with plant forms. You know, it's spending time really generating a bit of gratitude and appreciation for the uniqueness of the qualities that they possess, and that we are living with and amongst them. We are interdependent. They are necessary for us to even be here on this planet, and we have to take the time to generate reverence. And I just love the word reverence. Gary Zukav, in a wonderful book, Seed of the Soul, he's got a great, I'm going to just paraphrase it, but he's got a great definition for reverence, and it's moving beyond the shell of a form, you know, and that could be a person, a tree, a rock, the planet Earth, moving beyond the shell and into its essence. And so, you know, as we spend time contemplating or just being with and generating reverence for planet Earth, for Gaia, for rivers and trees and streams and rabbits and hawks and clouds and water, you know, we really, when we get into the essence, we realize that we aspects of these beings live in us, aspects of us live in them, and it really does help us feel integrated, feel interdependent, and feel a part of it, and then generates respect. And it then moves us toward, as we're going to talk about next week, our moral compass, so that we treat these beings, rivers, trees, the planet Earth, with respect. You know, that helps guide us. Once we generate this reverence, I find that then, you know, we have some guidance as to mm-hmm. how to relate. Gosh, just watch a David Attenborough. You know, is it Planet Earth, I believe it's called? I mean, you just can't watch that without just your jaw dropping at the magnificence and diversity of the planet Earth. Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I was thinking about this last night. I was driving back from a meeting. And I was driving towards this very dramatic sunset, which I could experience, you know, and label as a sunset. But for me, there's a whole other dimension if the way that I think about it is that the Earth is dressing itself in this beautiful display.
No.
You know, that it has organized this beautiful display for all... For the whole community that lives here on Earth, these wonderful colors, you know, and display, it just gives it a different kind of dimension for me.
Cosmic.
Yeah, exactly.
Cosmically.
Exactly.
Dorothy, we really are at the end of the show.
I just have to say one more word, and that is to link to next week,
yes.
That part of what we're getting at here is the need to learn to focus on the common good. And that's what we're going to pick up next week.
Beautiful. Yes, reverence and having that sense of awe, you know, then leads to that interconnectedness. And you just want to treat it, others, and you want to be here, right? You want to be here in a way that works for all. So, Dorothy, thank you so much. That was a great show. Thank you, Carter, to our producer for keeping us in line. And we will see you next week. We're going to talk about the moral compass and being a cosmic citizen. Thanks again, listeners. We'll be back next week.
Thank you for listening to Spirit Fire Radio. Tune in each Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern, for your weekly guide to purposeful living and practical spirituality. Join hosts Steve Kramer and Dorothy Riddle as they shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in your everyday life. Add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. To learn more, visit spiritfireradio.com.